Islam-friendly holidays are booming in Turkey, attracting Muslims who feel less comfortable at home and offering relief to a hotel trade that saw demand slump amid bomb attacks and political instability. Turkey's alcohol-free resorts are on the rise, with separate pools, beaches and spas for conservative men and women. Cameras certainly not allowed in the women-only pools, where they can feel free to wear what they want.
French President Emmanuel Macron is visiting Russia's President Vladimir Putin. But it's a third man, the American President Donald Trump, that may have left the Frenchman with little leverage over the Russian on hotspots like Syria, Ukraine, and Iran. And without that unity, Macron's strategy has likely lost a lot of clout. He's negotiating with some far bigger countries whose interests don't necessarily align with his own.
I've decided to terminate the planned summit in Singapore on June 12th. I believe that this is a tremendous setback for North Korea and indeed a setback for the world.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's May 25th. And it's 5:11 in the morning, and we made it to Friday. It is going to be a three-day weekend for a lot of folks, and it looks like it's going to be a nice weekend in Chicago. And it's going to be a nice business day as we started here on The Opening Bell. It's Friday. That means Paul Nolte is in the house. We're going to be talking about our portfolios and some economic news, and also our regular Friday conversation with Brian Summers this morning from Skift.com. We'll talk with Brian about some developments with an airline that you may have never heard of. Could soon. That's coming up at 5:40 this morning. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are up 61 points this morning. NASDAQ and S&P futures are higher as well. NASDAQ futures up about 27. Around the globe, markets are generally higher in Europe, with the DAX up almost 1%, the CAC almost 1%. In Asia, markets are generally mixed, with the Hang Seng off by about 0.5%, down 172 points. And the Nikkei up just about a fraction. Oil futures, oil is trading at about $69.37 a barrel. That's down a full $1.34, almost 2% from the high previous high. On some of the stories we're watching for you, of course, yesterday, the Dow reacting to news, at least briefly, that the summit would not happen with North Korea. There's also some fallout about trade and tariffs. Speaking of that, United Auto Workers President Dennis Williams cautiously backing the U.S. decision to explore raising tariffs on imported vehicles. He says the nation should have looked at them long ago because it has become a dumping ground for foreign companies that sometimes are subsidizing government. He is one of a few people that are supporting that. A lot of the Republicans, some of the Republican lawmakers are scratching their heads, a little critical of that, and other groups are as well. So we'll see what shakes out there. President Trump yesterday asked the government to make it easier for private companies to get to and from space. The president signed the Space Policy Directive. He joined was joined at the White House by the vice president, who heads the National Space Council. The government wants to make it easier for companies like SpaceX and Jeff Bezos and his company to start doing more space stuff. It is Friday, and we're happy to have Paul Nolte here from Kingsview Asset Management, as always. Paul is a senior portfolio manager and SVP over at Kingsview, and we're happy to have him here, too, on Fridays. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Steve. Nice to be with you.
What did you like or dislike this week?
The economic data was actually pretty good. It was interesting watching the market react yesterday to North Korea not having the summit. The market went down 200 points, and then it was almost as if Wall Street remembered that we don't really care about trade and geopolitical events, and the markets rallied back, and we're seeing a continued rally here. The underlying economic data is still pretty good. We're still concerned a little bit about inflation. The Fed, in their minutes that they released this week, indicated they might let inflation run a little hot, and that got the markets pretty excited because that meant that the Fed may not be as aggressive in raising rates, allowing inflation to pick up a little bit higher. So that was the genesis of the rally that we saw on Wednesday, and I think that's really what the markets are kind of focused on here, because now we're looking at a Fed that may raise rates only two more times this year, and the third one has come off the table a bit.
We still think June is still a live meeting.
Oh, absolutely.
Though.
Yeah, June is definite. And what's now questionable is December. Mm-hmm. They're still anticipating to do one more hike in September. So the June, September is on. December is now questionable.
One of the things I saw this week that was in some of the earnings reports of Lowe's and some of the other companies, I think Target was in there as well, was that the weather this spring impacted people going and getting stuff to fix up their homes.
Mm-hmm.
How is that, do you think, might play out as we've... I mean, it's great to have a nice weekend here in Chicago this weekend. People will be out doing that. But is that going to have a larger impact on the economy?
Not too much. I mean, that is kind of the standard retail excuse. It's either too cold or too warm or too rainy or whatever the deal is. That weather is always one of the comments that a lot of retailers make for missing estimates. I'm not quite sure what good shopping weather is, but that's really what's behind it. So it has a short-term impact, but I don't think it has much of a long-term impact.
As we look toward this long three-day weekend, I think everybody needs a three-day weekend at this point, just to sort of sit back.
The weather today argues that maybe we do a four-day weekend.
I think there's a lot of people that would agree with that. But is there anything out there that you see coming that might upset this card in any way?
You know, one of the things that we're looking at is obviously what's on everybody's mind as they drive around this weekend, and this officially kicks off the driving season, is pump prices for gasoline. This is the highest that we're going to be paying for gas at the pump in 3 years. And it's something that everybody notices because every couple of days you're going to fill up the car. Historically, this marks the high point, surprisingly enough, this marks the high point for pump prices. You normally see that back off between now and, say, Thanksgiving or so. You gradually see that come back. It will be interesting to see if that continues. If we see oil prices continue to plod higher over the course of the summer and we don't get that relief, that can have an impact on consumers' spending, consumer sentiment, because that's something that they see and feel much more than an increase in food price or something like that, because it's something that they can see pretty regularly every day.
And our friends over at GasBuddy.com this morning say average gas, U.S. gas, now $2.98 a gallon. But there are 15 or 20 states where it's already above $3 a gallon.
And it is here in Chicago. You know, California is pushing $4. So as people get out and drive around, that's going to have a big impact. And it's not yet high enough where people are going to change their summer driving plans, but we're getting very close.
Paul, hang on. We're going to take a quick break here. We'll be back with Paul Nolte. It's our regular Friday conversation here on The Opening Bell.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Copying the iPhone is costing Samsung more than $500 million. A California jury has ordered Samsung to pay nearly $539 million for infringing on Apple's patents. It's a bit of a split decision. Apple wanted Samsung to pay about $1 billion. Samsung wanted to pay much less. Trouble at T-Mobile, the wireless company, now admitting there was a bug on its website that let anyone with a customer's phone find out all sorts of account details, like names, addresses, and in some cases, even tax ID numbers. But T-Mobile says it doesn't appear that anyone actually made use of the bug. Sales of existing homes falling in April by about 2.5%. The National Association of Realtors says sales are being pushed down by higher mortgage costs and a lack of homes actually on the market. Later this morning, Fed Chairman Jerome Powell will speak to the financial media. Investors always looking for rate guidance. And Dow futures pointing to a higher open leading into the holiday weekend. Dave Packer, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. We're on with Paul Nolte this morning from Kingsview Asset Management. I was expecting Dave to mention that story about the Amazon Echo that recorded, apparently, according to KIRO-TV out in Seattle, recorded a conversation, a family's private conversation, and sent it to everybody in their contact list without them knowing it. You don't have one of those little things.
No, I have enough voices in my head. I don't need anything else in the room.
Paul, let's talk about some of the staples, consumer staple stocks. These are still kind of safe. This is still a place where we might be able to put some money, or no?
I think so. It's been one area that has been out of favor for the last couple of years, and actually this year is the worst performing of the S&P 500 sectors. As people rotate back out of the safe areas and look more toward the riskier parts of the market, technology, basic materials, and more recently, energy. When you take a look at where we think we are in the economic cycle, we're probably in the later innings of this expansion. It's not going to last forever. We will get a recession at some point. And when we start to see the markets and the economy slow down enough that a recession could be on the horizon, consumer staples, utilities, real estate are all very good investments. Those are the places that investors normally run to when things don't look so good, because you're always going to need toothpaste, you're always going to need canned goods, etc. The last couple of years, those companies have gotten very expensive as interest rates went to zero, because that was a good place for dividends. They were, again, it was you get 2 to 3% in the way of a dividend when you were getting nothing on bonds. With interest rates going up, those stocks have come down over the last year, 2 years now, and actually today are starting to be what we would consider fair value, not quite undervalued, but at least fair value, where it's one sector that may make some sense to start to accumulate in anticipation of the potential for a recession maybe a year, 2 years out.
What would be an example of a staple, consumer staple stock?
Colgate, Palmolive, Clorox,
Procter & Gamble,
Philip Morris. I mean, you don't think of cigarettes as a staple, but you know, for those that smoke, you know it's a staple.
Right. Philip Morris, don't they also do like mac and cheese? Or they do
They separate out Kraft.
Yeah. Oh,
so,
right.
Yeah, Kraft is another staple.
Kraft Heinz.
But those types of companies certainly, because they have a very consistent revenue growth, they have very consistent earnings, they in general pay 2% or more in the way of a dividend, and those companies also have historically been very good at raising dividends on an annual basis. So whatever you're getting paid this year in the way of income is going to be going up in future years. So it's a good part of an overall portfolio. It's one that we've generally underweighted over the last couple of years, but it's one that we're starting to stick our toe back in the water, because a lot of those companies now are providing some pretty good value here.
You were off last week, and I wanted to ask you this, the sports betting decision was made. Are some of these gambling companies that are public companies, are those going to be good investments moving forward?
They have a potential to be. One of the biggest is IGT, International Gaming Tech, mm-hmm. And certainly some of the casino stocks. They all bounced on that news. So I think there's some benefit there, and actually some of the discussions are that many of the overseas companies, especially those in Britain, are good bets for the portfolio. But yes, I think there's some longer-term benefit that we're going to see from the casino area that's going to allow more people the access to be able to legally bet on gaming. So we've seen some of those stocks pick up here over the last couple of weeks. From a longer-term perspective, again, we'd take a look at valuation, and I think some of them provide some pretty good value in today's market.
Anything else that you like out there?
We've been a big proponent of emerging markets, and they've certainly gotten taken to the cleaners here over this month. The sell in May and go away hasn't worked for the S&P 500. This has been a very good month for the S&P. The international markets have suffered from a very strong dollar. The dollar turned around and has gone higher this month, so international emerging markets have fared relatively poorly. All of the trade talks have actually been a benefit for small-cap stocks. They tend to be immune to changes in the dollar because they don't have their revenues determined by a lot of trade. They tend to be U.S.-centric. So we still do like the U.S. markets. We still do, even though they've come down a little bit this month, we still do like, from a long-term perspective, international emerging markets. And we're seeing a little bit of a rally in bonds as the Fed may not be as aggressive raising rates. Interest rates have come down here a little bit. So it's been a pretty good area for markets, and we think that can continue for a while because, again, we're not seeing a recession anytime soon in the market or in the economy. So we think stocks can continue to be a good place to be.
The yield on the 10-year, 2.968.
Yeah, we just got below 3%. On the release of the Fed minutes, and we saw a big bond rally on Wednesday. The concern was we got over 3% and things were going to come to a screeching halt. That hasn't been the case. The markets get used to those higher rates, just as they've gotten used to higher energy prices. We thought that would stop things in their tracks. Not so much. The markets do adapt and move on from there. So I don't think interest rates are high enough yet to stop the markets. That may occur when we get up around 3.5%, 4% on that 10-year bond, and we're a long way away from that.
Awesome conversation, Paul. You got big plans for the weekend?
We got a lot of work. Since the weather's going to be nice, we're going to be outside and enjoying the weather every day.
Great. We'll have a good one. We'll see you again next Friday.
Talk to you then.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. You can find out more about Paul and his colleagues at kingsview.com.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by chicagoinno.com. According to emails uncovered by the Chicago Tribune, Amazon officials were, quote, impressed with Chicago's bid for the tech giant's HQ2. That's according to an email sent by Amazon's Jay Carney to Mayor Rahm Emanuel in January. He sent the email on the same day that Amazon announced its shortlist of potential cities to receive the second headquarters. And New Mix Materials, a startup that's made a technology to remove toxic metals from water, won first place and $30,000 at Northwestern University's VentureCat competition on Wednesday. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at chicagoinno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Aviation news involving Chicago-based United Airlines. The new chairwoman of the United Board of Directors will be Jane Garvey. She is the former FAA administrator. She's also served on the United Airlines board since 2009. Brian Summers reporting that out at skift.com. Brian is with us this morning. He's the airline business reporter at skift.com. Conversation this morning about a couple of different aviation, airline, and travel stories. And Brian is with us via Skype. Brian, lots of Russia in the news politically, but there's also some, from your vantage point, some airline news involving Russia. What's going on?
Yeah, this is an unusual one, and it helps to know a little bit about the backstory. In order to fly over a country, every airline needs permission from the government, and usually they have to pay some sort of nominal fee for the right. A lot of U.S. passenger and cargo airlines have to fly over Russia to get to Asia. It's generally the quickest way, even from Chicago, from LA, from just about everywhere in the United States. In recent months, Russia has made it a little bit more difficult for U.S. airlines to fly over its airspace. Now, generally, passenger airlines have been okay. There were a few days there that American Airlines wasn't able to fly over Russia. Nobody really knows why. But again, generally, United and other airlines have not had any problems. Now, the big deal is for cargo airlines. For some reason, I don't know why, I'm not sure anyone in the United States knows why, Russia has really been cracking down on the routes that cargo airlines from the United States can use over Russia. And apparently, the DOT filing, the Department of Transportation filing that you referenced there, says that things have been so difficult that cargo airlines, and I'm going to presume this is like FedEx and UPS, although I don't know for sure, are having to go really out of their way and avoid certain segments of Russian airspace. And that's costing these cargo companies money. So the U.S. has to decide what to do. And there was a bit of paperwork filed this week where the U.S. Department of Transportation essentially is going to make it just a little bit harder for Russian cargo and passenger airlines to fly into and out of the United States. It's not dealing with overflights. Those flights still can fly over the United States. But essentially, Russian airlines are going to have to file a little bit more paperwork with the United States for the foreseeable future. Is that a big deal? I'm not sure. I don't know if anybody is sure. But maybe this is just about negotiation leverage, because I know that the U.S. cargo carriers really want their Russian overflight routes back.
And I was going to just follow up a little bit more on that. I mean, did you think this has anything to do with geopolitical issues elsewhere in the world involving the U.S. or no?
It's so hard to tell. You know, I'm not a political expert. I write about airlines. I don't even live in Washington, D.C. There could be so many different things going on. But I do know that it's very, very annoying, especially for cargo carriers. You know, Russia is a huge country. There's prime routes that you want. I understand, you know, people forget about this, but cargo airlines in the United States operate differently than passenger airlines. And so FedEx and UPS are not just going to fly from the United States to Asia. They're also going to fly between, say, Asia and Europe. And obviously, you need to fly over Russia to do that. You need a good route. So that if cargo carriers are losing this opportunity, that's a problem.
You've written another story about why it's taking some airlines a long time to pay for compensation required by European law. And you've kind of shared your own story about this.
Yeah, this one is sort of interesting as well. I mean, travelers who go to Europe even once a year probably know that the European Union has really cracked down on airlines that delay and cancel flights. And if they do and the delay is long enough, airlines are supposed to give passengers a check for the trouble. And it could be a few hundred dollars or maybe a little bit more. And a couple of years ago, I had a flight from Madrid to Barcelona in Spain that was canceled, and I just assumed that they would pay me because that's the rules and I'm the expert. This was in September 2016, and I still have not been paid yet, and I sort of know what I'm doing. I hired this third-party company called Air Help, and they're supposed to get the money for me. Apparently, they will at some point, but they've been complaining to me both as a customer and then when I put my journalist hat on and saying, look, you know, these airlines are doing all they can to just take as much time as they possibly can before they pay people out.
And for some people, I'm guessing it might be more than just a couple hundred dollars. I mean, in some cases, this could be thousands of dollars.
It could be. You know, I don't know what the exact rules are, but it depends on how long your flight has been delayed and how inconvenienced you are. You know, we in the United States don't really have something like this, although people should know that if they're flying a U.S. airline and they're flying from Europe, these rules do apply. So it's always worth filing a claim. My suggestion, and I hate to say this for a lot of airlines, is maybe go through a third party like this company I'm using, Air Help. Sometimes it's just not worth it to deal with the airlines directly. A company like Air Help is an expert. Of course, they're going to take a slice of whatever they get from me. But sometimes, as the cliche goes, the juice is not worth the squeeze.
There's an airline out there called Sun Country. I think I've flown on this maybe once in my lifetime. Minneapolis-based Sun Country Airlines. You've written about how they're making some changes.
Yeah, once is more times than I've been on this airline, but you're right. Sun Country is a Minneapolis-based airline. They're known for having excellent customer service and friendly people and comfortable planes. People have described it to me like flying on a U.S. legacy airline, maybe in 1995. You know, they haven't really changed with the times, but they're comfortable. People like them. The problem is that's not exactly a profitable way to run an airline. In 2018, they were sold earlier this year to a private equity firm, and now Sun Country, which only has about 30 airplanes, is going to start operating like your typical sort of U.S. or European discount airline. So they're adding more seats to the aircraft. They're taking away first class. They're going to charge for advanced seat assignments. They're already charging for carry-on bags. One interesting thing about the airline is if you didn't live in Minneapolis or were going to Minneapolis recently, you would pretty much never fly them. But now they're going to start expanding nationwide. They're flying routes like Los Angeles to Honolulu, Dallas to Las Vegas, usually less than once a day, maybe four times a week. They're in this strategy where they're going to be chasing routes where there's like an unlimited supply of people. So if your fare is right and you're flying from LA to Honolulu, you can fill your plane during the peak periods without any trouble. United, American, Delta literally can't fly enough flights to satisfy the demand. So Sun Country is going to fill that niche.
Brian, before I leave you this morning, we have the Memorial Day weekend coming up. A lot of folks are headed to the airports. From somebody who's an experienced flyer like yourself, any last-minute advice?
Well, it's kind of funny because, as you say, I am a professional flyer, so airports don't make me uncomfortable in any way. A lot of people would tell you to get to the airport very early. I think that's sort of a waste at this point. Airlines are pretty efficient, airports as well. The TSA is getting better, especially if you have pre-check. I just think the most important thing to do is to remain calm, not be nervous. Of course, I fly a lot, and I know that things go wrong. They may go wrong for other people. It's not a big deal. Generally, the airline is not out to get you. You're going to get home at some point. These are very complicated businesses, and I can almost guarantee people that the airline is going to try the best they can to get the customers to where they're going.
As a professional flyer, Brian, do you avoid these crazy weekends?
Of course not. I'm not flying this weekend, and I'm actually disappointed about it. But I'll be back in the air pretty soon.
All right, Brian. We'll talk to you again next week. Happy holidays.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Summers is airline business reporter for Skift. Skift on Twitter and skift.com. And make sure you sign up for the weekly Skift Airline Innovation Report at skift.com/airline. And follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Summers. That's Summers with U, S-U-M-E-R-S.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a positive open later on Wall Street. Dow futures up 61, NASDAQ futures are up 30. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
And good morning to you, Steve, as we look at livestock and grain markets on this final trading day ahead of a three-day holiday weekend. Live cattle are going to be watched very carefully today because the Department of Agriculture will be releasing its monthly cattle on feed report during the session this afternoon. Yesterday, the June live cattle contract ended a dollar lower, and that put it at $104.40. But an interesting story this week. U.S. beef packer margins climbed sharply with a decline in cattle prices. Cattle packers, beef packers, including Tyson Foods and Cargill, racking up historically high margins thanks to the slumping cattle prices and an oversupply. And as Americans get ready to turn to beef for their backyard summer barbecues, the HedgersEdge.com that keeps track of the profit on cattle for the packer said that U.S. beef packers on Wednesday this week earned an estimated $236.90 per head of cattle processed. That's the highest this year, and it had not topped $100 since November of 2017. And it's getting close to the all-time record of $254.35. So what this boils down to for the consumer, Steve, is there could be lower beef prices at the meat counter during the summer grilling season.
Which begins in earnest this weekend, or in what's going to be on your grill?
On my grill, I'll be going to Arlington Park Racetrack, so I know they'll have tenderloin on their grill, and that's what I'm going to be enjoying. And the grain market also mentioned the fact that the Chinese situation continues to be up in the air on what's going to happen there, but at least China and made its first appearance in the U.S. soybean market in 6 weeks this week. They bought one cargo of soybeans, and as many traders have been telling me, it's not unusual for China to cut its soybean purchases from the U.S. this time of the year because the soybeans from Brazil and Argentina are coming onto the market, and so that is some pressure from the standpoint of pricing there. So we'll be keeping an eye on that. And then as we approach June Dairy Month, if I can mention this, because the dairy farm industry continues to be under a major challenge, and Dean Foods, particularly, based in Dallas, Texas now. Story this week that a plant in Lynn, Massachusetts, that has been in business for 80 years is closing its doors. Hundreds of employees losing jobs when a Massachusetts dairy company shuts its doors at its Lynn factory. And it employs about 300 people, and they are blaming the cutback in consumption of milk. And we're hearing that more and more, that as milk consumption goes down, companies like Dean Foods are having more challenges from a price standpoint.
All right, Orion, have a great weekend enjoy Arlington Park.
I will, and you enjoy Beef on the Grill.
Outstanding. Will do. Thanks, Orion. It is Orion Samuelson. Make sure you listen to The Morning Show with Orion and Max tomorrow morning at 5. From 5 to 6 right here on 720 WGN. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, May 25th. The Commerce Department releases its report on durable goods for April. We'll also see a couple of Fed speakers out there. Jerome Powell, also Charles Evans from the Chicago Fed, Robert Kaplan. We'll also get a report on consumer sentiment today.